Welcome back to Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We've got a really interesting guest joining us now on the program. His name is Emil DeAndres, and the name of his book is Hard to Grip. It's a memoir. This guy's got an unbelievable story. At the age of 22, he was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, seemingly in the midst of a really promising baseball career just before he was set to pitch professionally in Belgium. The story kind of chronicles his baseball career dealing with rheumatoid arthritis and how he was able to cope with it and move on with his life. He joins us now on the program. Emil, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm great, and thank you so much for taking a few minutes to join us. So, kind of take us back to life before you were diagnosed. What was your career like? What was kind of your mindset going to pitch professionally? Kind of take us through that time of your life.
Yeah, so I pitched for 4 years at the University of Hawaii, Hilo. I was a relief pitcher. I kind of stacked up a bunch of appearances as a pitcher out there. We actually played, I don't know where you guys are in relation to University of Kansas or Wichita State.
Yeah, we're actually in, we are in Lawrence where KU is located.
Oh, wow. I mean, we play, there's actually a significant chapter in my book dedicated just to my experience playing Wichita State. And I think their coach is named Richie Price. We played him for four straight years. We knew all their players and stuff like that. And so there's actually like a lot of, there's a lot of dedication page-wise to Kansas baseball in the early 2005, 2008, when all the coaches' sons were on the team, actually. So anyways, I played against them, and I pitched a bunch. And basically, at the end of my career, you know, I was a left-handed pitcher that didn't throw too hard. So I didn't really have many scouts coming to games and sort of eyeing me for a major league team. But I knew that I'd had, you know, I'd experienced marginal success as a pitcher out there and wanted to continue my career. And so Europe seemed to be like the most practical avenue for professional baseball. And so I put a bullpen of a video of my bullpen up on YouTube, and I got a contract to go play in Belgium, and that was where I was set to go.
And at what juncture in this kind of transition did you find out about being diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis?
So like in the same month that I got this contract, I started to feel, you know, a weird sensation in my pitching elbow. And that over the course of a week or so spread to other parts of my body and quite rapidly. And I'd been going to a sports doctor, and the sports doctor decided to refer me to a rheumatologist. And that was when I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. And this is all in the course of like 1 month. It was really, really rapid.
So before that, you were just a normal, healthy pitching prospect, right? You didn't have any idea that this thing was kind of looming?
No, I mean, there's a part at the beginning of my book where I sort of recall these sort of mysterious phantom swellings that I would experience just for like one semester in high school, where I would wake up and like be unable to lift my shoulder, or lift my arm, I should say, and or it would cause excruciating pain, but then it would just disappear the next day as if it had never happened. And so I had, like, I don't know, traces of something literally for like 3 months once in high school. But it came and went so quickly. It was almost like a figment of my imagination. So other than that, this came on, really unexpectedly.
His name is Emil DeAndres. The name of the book is Hard to Grip. It's a fascinating read. So what was the initial reaction? How did you find out that you were being diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis? What was that like?
Well, you know, I went through denial just because rheumatoid arthritis is not like, I mean, it's one of the most uncommon things that can happen to a young man. Rheumatoid arthritis, I would come to find, is almost like statistically only attacks middle-aged women. And so here I was like kind of in the physical prime of my life and sort of with an athlete's mentality, kind of stubborn and proud, being told that I was going to suddenly have the body of more or less an old woman for the rest of my life. And so I was in denial. I refused to take the medication that they prescribed me because I felt if I took the medication, that meant I was admitting to myself that I actually had this disease.
I mean, was it immediately over for you? Did you continue to try and play through it, or was that kind of a game ender for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, So initially when the disease was fresh and it was just in my elbow, I would still try and, you know, do a bunch of push-ups and play long toss every day because, you know, when you pitch your whole life, you wake up with feeling weird sometimes in your arm. And those kinds of things you tell yourself you have to play through if you want to be an athlete. And so I was used to playing through things like this. But then, you know, rheumatoid arthritis without medication, I mean, that is an unstoppable force. There's no denying it. There's no playing through it eventually. And so I definitely pushed myself to that point where the disease kind of took over my body. Like, I was having a hard time getting upstairs and toweling myself off after a shower. So there was my life had to just go in a different direction.
And I imagine it wasn't coming down with something that bothered you. Like, if you had to have Tommy John surgery, or you had swelling in your knee or in your elbow, like, that's one thing. Those are injuries that athletes, and particularly baseball players, are used to dealing with. They're pretty common amongst the sport. But having something like this, was that the part that was the most difficult to deal with? Like, this isn't the type of disorder, this isn't the type of injury, even though it's not an injury, that guys like me are supposed to deal with?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, when my career ended before it began, and people were asking, oh, what happened? I actually, like you said, I preferred to keep it sort of vague and keep it kind of like sports injury sounding when I told other people, because I didn't want anybody to know that I had this disease. I thought it just felt incredibly vulnerable to have this sort of, it felt like an emasculating disease to have. And so when people asked, or when I told people, it was just like, yeah, I blew out my arm, or it turns out my elbow is kind of shot, or, you know, and then people would ask, oh, well, can you get surgery or something? I'd just be like, nah, it's just blown out, you know? And I just kept it like as ambiguous as I could, so that was the impression that was left upon them. Cause yeah, I totally felt that way. I felt this disease was really an embarrassing thing to have.
What was the kind of the support staff around you? I mean, what kinds of reactions were you getting from your friends, from your family members, from your teammates?
Yeah, well, I mean, because I was embarrassed and because I wasn't telling many people, I was kind of putting myself in a position where I wouldn't get support, and that was kind of how I wanted it. So beyond my parents, who, you know, I was on their health care, and so they knew I was going to these visits, and they were, you know, checking up on me, and my mom wanted to go to as many with me as she could just because she wanted to get as much information as she could. She wasn't getting any from me. Other than that, I kept it to myself. So people, you know, even my best friends didn't really know the extent as to what was happening. And my girlfriend, who would then become my wife, at the time we were doing long distance because she went to school in South Carolina, and the only way we saw each other was Skype. And I even kind of kept it from her as much as I could as well. I kind of just hid it.
What was the turning point when you did kind of come to accept reality? What was there a smoking gun? Was there like a turning point, or was it more of a process sort of deal?
Yeah, there was like, in the book, I sort of document all these different avenues I attempt to go down to treat my symptoms before taking the actual medication. So I go on this sort of like holistic quest of like, I go to a Chinese herbalist, which is kind of a funny moment in the book because there are so many language barriers. I'm not even really sure what's happening in the room, but I don't ever really heal, and it ends up being really expensive. So I go through that, and then I try different food allergy tests, and I augment my diet, and I try all these different things, hoping that, you know, they will alleviate the symptoms somehow. And it keeps on getting worse. And there's a point in the book where finally I take all the stuff out of my diet, and I'm eating like the diet of a deer, basically, for like a month, and nothing happens, and my body is just shutting down. I'm like, I have to take the medication. And that was kind of when I understood that this is the new person I am now.
How long was that from when you got diagnosed to when you finally came around and started taking that medication?
I think it was around 6 months, which is a really long time to have this disease and not treat it with medication. And like 6 months with rheumatoid arthritis is way too much time to allow it to spread. And so I was, by the end of it, I was like I said, I was almost a cripple.
So then you finally, you make peace with it, you make peace with your situation. What was kind of the next step for you? Did you have any idea what you were going to do with the rest of your life?
No, that's the thing. Like, it was, I mean, I think it sucks for every, I mean, it sucks for a lot of people who graduate college with a degree and then move home and don't even know what they're going to do and find a hard time getting a job, yeah. Which was, that's like the worst college hangover. And I was definitely one of those people. And it was just a little bit, there was like a level of complexity to it because this was kind of being thrust in my face because I already thought I had a career. Or at least I thought that I was going to be playing baseball for a few more years to just sort of put off joining the real world, you know. So going home, and, you know, I was so used to spending hours and hours a day on the baseball field, like when, you know, either playing long toss or throwing in a bullpen or lifting weights or jogging fences or whatever. Like, I would, like, when you spent like 3 hours of your life every day, or 3 hours of your day, your whole life on the baseball field, it's tough to suddenly like have that window of free time. And so I needed to find something that would kind of challenge me and stimulate me the way baseball had. And I looked to writing because I majored in creative writing in college. And so that was what I ended up doing to sort of start occupying my time.
And baseball, I feel like, is unique in the fact from other sports. I mean, if you are playing at a high level, which you clearly were, pretty much from when you're a little kid all the way till the end of your career, it is a 12-month out-of-the-year job. It is unbelievably time-consuming. Every sport is if you make it to that level. But I imagine with baseball, it's particularly unique because for a lot of people in your situation, like, that's all you know for the first 20-some-odd years of your life.
Yeah, and, you know, my case is a little bit unique, too, because I don't know how many – if there's any Kansas baseball players from that time period listening, they might remember. I was like I was the slowest throwing pitcher on our team. Like, I threw like high 70s, low 80s with like, I mean, my curveball was legitimately clocked in the 50s at one point. And so, I mean, I threw clown balls like every pitch. And so when you're playing Division I baseball and you're playing teams like Kansas and Wichita State and, you know, Florida State and stuff like that, and you're throwing all those clown pitches, like, baseball suddenly becomes a very mental game. Like, I wasn't going in there up there and just blindly throwing heaters past bats. I was having to sort of, you know, strategize. And so that was what was fun about the game for me. That was like, that was part of the game, you know, working your way through tough situations like that. And so I found writing was the kind of craft that challenged me and stimulated me and occupied my mind the way baseball had.
Emil DeAndre's joining us here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. The name of the book is Hard to Grip. So you mentioned how you started writing. Did somebody push you in that direction, or was that kind of something that you did on your own?
In becoming a writer, in becoming interested in being a writer, that happened at the university where I in the undergrad level. I had a teacher who was like sort of neurotically enthusiastic about writing. And he kind of like, you either drank his Kool-Aid or didn't. And, I ended up drinking his Kool-Aid, and he like convinced me to sort of, you know, to pursue writing and to sort of explore my creativity and find out if I really did like, you know, writing stories and crafting, you know, stories and stuff like that. And I did. And so I ended up majoring in creative writing just because I enjoyed my time in his class. You know, it was like a very welcome sort of juxtaposition to being on the baseball field with a bunch of jocks, you know. And so that was a cool balance for me, and that was definitely what got me into writing in the first place.
At what juncture did you begin writing this book?
Pretty quick. Like, I was diagnosed in 2008, 2009-ish, and I was writing this book by 2011. And throughout... So I kind of wrote about my experience with the disease in real time. And then once the book was done, when I felt it was finally done, I just went through and edited it because my writer's voice changed a ton over the course of 6 years. And I actually wrote my first book that was published in the middle of writing this book. So like I started in 2011, and then an opportunity came along to write another book, which I took. So this Hard to Grip book went on hiatus for a couple of years, and then I returned to it. So that, you know, like all these different writers' voices sort of came into me and left. And so it left a draft of this book that had like a wide range of narrative voices, and so I kind of did a lot of editing as a result. But yeah, I mean, I wrote it for about 5 years, and it went through a few different drafts for sure.
See, that's interesting to me because I feel like most stories like this would be retrospective. They would be written after the fact, but you've kind of got the best of both worlds. I imagine if you would have just waited to write all of it 5, 6, 7 years down the line, it'd probably read as an entirely different book.
I think so. Especially the sort of emotional fury. And my book is really anecdotal. So I think a lot of the key scenes in the book would have been forgotten, or the sharpness of them would have been sort of dialed down or watered down a little bit just from time past. And I think telling my like the anger and the frustration in those moments keeps it pretty honest. And I agree, it would have been a lot, like writing it retrospectively would have sort of indulged the emotions a little bit too much and kept them a little bit inauthentic.
Beyond writing, what do you do now, Emil?
I teach English at a community college about 20 minutes south of San Francisco, and I coach baseball at the high school where I once played baseball, and also at the college where I teach English. So I'm just balancing like coaching, teaching, and writing on a weekly basis.
How does your story affect you as a coach, if it does at all?
That's a good question. I mean, you know what it does? Because people ask questions similar to that. They're like, do you tell your story to your kids and remind them how difficult it is to achieve your dreams or something like that? And like, no, I don't do that. I don't try to use my story as like a warning to kids who are aspiring to be something. But I now love the game of baseball more than I ever did as a player, I think. And that's because I had it for so long. It was taken away from me. I resented it. I reaccepted it. And now I accept my role as like a teacher of it and like just a general lover of the game rather than just like a hardcore competitor. And with that sort of deeper level of love, I really do try and reflect that upon the players. I want them not to fear losing it and to understand how hard it is for them to ever, you know, accomplish anything great in the game. But I do want them to understand how great of a game it is and how much they will remember these times later in their lives.
The name of the book is Hard to Grip. Emil, where can people buy this if they want to check it out?
It's in bookstores in the sports section, but also Amazon makes it just one click away.
And it's the name of the book, Hard to Grip, Emil DeAndres. I mean, it is a very gripping story. It's pretty thought-provoking. There's some pretty sad moments. There's some moments that'll make you laugh. A really good read, Emil. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to come on the program and talk to us about it.
Thanks a lot, man.